All right, everybody, welcome to the RocketX podcast. I'm your host, Victor Rancor. Today, I got an exciting guest from the roofing industry. This guy's grown scale and sold his roofing company. He also runs a large training organization for roofing contractors, and he also throws a really, really big event called RoofCon. Mr. Hunter Ballou, man, welcome to the podcast. I'm excited to talk to you because we have so many similarities just in different verticals. So welcome to the podcast, brother.
Yeah, man, excited to be on, jamming up with you.
Yeah, so, you know, obviously we had some talks offline and we're trying to, you know, I was trying to get a little bit of background on you. And, you know, obviously the first thing we talked about is this, I thought about was the similarities, right? Like, you know, you said you started off in firefighting. Was that your original goal?
Yeah. So I left when I got out of high school. I just knew college wasn't for me. My parents were in kind of the drug scene and I had kind of been split up from them living with grandparents. I just wanted to get out of town. So I went to the Marine Corps right out of high school, then did the fire department for 5 years full-time as a firefighter EMT before I started in business.
And in the Marine Corps, what was your MOS in the Marine Corps? What were you doing?
2311 ammo.
Nice. And did you have to do any tours or how long, or talk a little bit?
Oh, no, I kind of came in. It wasn't too bad. Some of the guys that were older than me, like all those guys went. I graduated in 09, so now didn't have anything. I was kind of boring, honestly.
You know, I actually enlisted as a corpsman in the Navy. So obviously I would have ended up in the, you know, in the Marines and with the Marine unit. So like what my brother enlisted with me and we both enlisted at the same time. We're in the delayed entry program. We're going to go to boot camp together. I want to say this is then like 07, 08. I think it was like 07 because my brother just turned 18 and we're both in and I snapped my ankle like 3 weeks before we leave. I broke it in three places on a half pipe and my poor little brother ended up having to go to the, he ended up going to the in without me, right? That he gets, you know, he goes in and becomes a corpsman. Ends up doing his tours with the Marines in Afghanistan. And, you know, he actually works for me. We talk about it all the time. And he's like, you motherfucker. He's like, you got to stay home and hang out with chicks. And I'm over here freaking sitting in the desert, freaking, you know, getting shot at and stuff. And yeah, I think it was like, I don't know how many corpsmen went into this thing and like only a certain amount came back. He's like, and obviously the stuff that he has to go through. So I'm always very grateful for the military. There's a side of me that I say, yeah, I wish I would have done it because, as you know, I feel like a pussy that I wasn't able to go. And then there's the other side. I'm like, thank God I did it because I wouldn't be where I'm at now. But yeah, man. Well, thank you so much for your service, first off. So you get out, you're going to go become a firefighter, and then you found out that firefighting is not a level one earning opportunity. So you're not going to be able to make enough money. Then you want to be a millionaire. And I don't know how many fire. I don't think they pay commission per fire you put out. So I don't think that was going to work out.
No, man, I was making 24 grand a year when I started. Every 2 weeks, I was getting a check for $709. I mean, it was like unlimited rolls at Texas Roadhouse, bro. We were balling out. I was rich.
You know, well, it's funny, you know, 12 years ago, I was living in Cleveland, Ohio, making $6.75 an hour doing oil changes. So I know, man, I was stealing the cup of noodles out of the break room and shit. So, I mean... Well, it's kind of fucked up, man. You think about it, like, they're firemen, the paramedics, police officers, and you're like, man, the people that have protected us, they get paid like shit. And it's like, you know, that's one of those things where you have to be a selfless human to be able to do that job. So, I mean, first off, thank you for even signing up for that because, you know, I would have saw that pay plan. I'd be like, hey, where's the rest of it? But, you know, secondly, like, obviously, you know, you go through all that stuff, and it's a lot of time, energy, and effort, right? Like, you know, I don't know about how it is where you are, but in California, to become a fireman is actually very fucking difficult. Like, you become a cop pretty easy, but to be a fireman, especially if you're white, it's very, very difficult to become a fireman in California. Like, you had to know somebody. Do you want to talk about, like, what's the process where you're at? Was it pretty hard to get into it, or is it somewhere it's kind of easier than you thought?
Yeah, I actually got super lucky, man. I had some guys that I was friends with out of high school that had been in the game longer than me, had gone and got their certifications. And I went to the academy, just kind of shortcut it, you know, because you go to the academy, it's like, I don't remember, 8 or 10, 12 weeks, something like that, instead of going and doing onesies and twosies for 2 years. So went and did the academy, and I came back. That was like December, and within 2 months, I had a job. And I think because I was in, you know, I'd been in the Marine Corps, I think that probably helped me some. So super grateful for that. Man, yeah, like, I learned so much, and I'm thankful for that time of my life because it taught me discipline. It taught me to have a good attitude. And the most important thing, I tell people this all the time, is it told me to just stay cool under pressure. You know, like if you're at an event, we talked about our events. You lost $1 million on an event. I lost $1 million on an event. You know, crazy stuff going on everywhere. You got celebrities coming in and people are like, dude, how do you stay so calm? It's like, man, when you see that stuff, like when you're holding a man as he dies and you're getting to hear his last words and it's breaking your heart because you can't do anything and you live with that for months and years afterwards, wondering what else you could have done, losing some money on an event or not fulfilling on an event, not having enough people is not as big of a deal. You just adapt and come back stronger next year.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, like, I talk about this in business, right? Like, you either fucking curl in a ball and just woe is me, and then all of a sudden you can't get out of it. Like, if you curl up and die, like, what's going to happen, right? And, you know, this is something I've had to deal with in business a lot, right? Because as you grow a business, like, there's no one that really, no one's going to come running for you. You got to make every decision. And when you're a new business owner, you make a lot of fucking bad decisions, especially like if you have no mentor or someone to guide you. You're just like, yeah, that sounds great. And then all of a sudden you get punched in the fucking mouth. And it's like, dude, you can either give up, which most contractors do. There's a reason why 95% of small businesses, home service contractors, go out of business within the first 5 years, right? It's because you make so many bad decisions and you get to a point where you either like give up or you try to figure out a way to work through it, right? So I definitely get that, and definitely losing money, I don't suggest doing, but you know, you want to talk a little bit about how you lost your money on that event? Like, you know, I lost it a different way. I lost it because I'm a bougie asshole. You lost it because of unforeseen circumstances, just like business.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I wish I could blame it all on the weather, man. I mean, I certainly could have been a little more responsible. You know, we went into the event, we brought in Tim Tebow and John Maxwell, Nick Anastasio, and some good speakers. But I built out this stage that was concert quality. I mean, lights and projectors and everything, 5,000 seats built out, and it cost a lot of money. And we had a hurricane hit during the event. We were in Orlando, hurricane hits, kills our ticket sales in comparison to what we thought we were going to do. So like 2019, we started RoofCon, had 39 people there, 10 vendors. The next year during COVID, it grows to 881 and 50 vendors. And 2,200 and 125 vendors. And then that fourth year, we still grew by 50% from 2,200 people to 3,400 people, but it was nowhere close to what we thought we were going to have. We thought we were going to be 4,000 or 5,000. And so that was a tough year. And fast forward to last year, we broke that 5,000. We had, the last I checked, it was like 5,242 or something like that. That was like in the middle of the show. So 5,200, so maybe 5,300 people.
Yeah, then that's not easy to do, right? To get any human to go travel anywhere for anything ain't easy, right? And people, and I talk about it, you know, my first year, like, I think we had like 300 people in 2021. We had 300 some people, and then we grew it to about 600, and then, you know, 700. I think last year we had about 1,200. This year we're about 2,000. But to get people to do that stuff is not easy to get them out there. And a lot of people don't understand what goes on in the back end of a event, right? Like, you're talking about AV, right? Like, I just got off yesterday having a $150,000 AV bill, right? I got to pay that up front. I got to pay the hotel up front. And, you know, like last year I had $1 million or $980,000 minimum, F&B minimum at the hotel we were at. This year I got smarter. You understand how to negotiate the contracts better. Then you also have to buy the room blocks. And if you don't fill the room blocks, you're on the hook for those as well. So like right now we're like trying to get everybody to book their rooms, and everybody likes to procrastinate on everything, right? And then they look at the guy putting on the event. Oh, he's making all this money. I'm like, I've never made a fucking penny on an event. I've only lost money. And it's close to over $2 million in 3 years, where it's like, man, I wish I had that $2 million back. But, you know, I look back at it in business, right? And there's ways to go about it. I could have went and gave everybody sack lunches. I could have cut down an AV. I could have cut down all these things. But then it wouldn't really be the event that I wanted to build and something special for the contractors, right? And sometimes in life, you got to gamble and you got to believe in yourself. So like when I lost $1.2 million last September for my event, you know, I could have curled up in a ball and died. I said, you know what? Fuck it. Write it up as a loss or write it up to like, but it was worth it to me because I'm going to grow this thing and that's going to bring out more people and more people are going to want to come next year. And that's what's happened, right? I got more people that want to come than ever. It's going to be at a great event and I'm really being tactical about it, but do 5,000 people, like that's a lot. I don't want to grow my event to that much. I don't want to be a 5,000, 6,000. I want to kind of stay at around the 2,000 range, I think is a good size before it gets too diluted. It's just so many people to deal with, like so many moving pieces and the vendors and all that stuff. So more power to you. I want to come out this year to RoofCon. I'm going to check it out. So I'm actually speaking at MDM in July. That'd be probably one of the biggest events that I spoke at. And they're expecting about 4,000 people, which is a freaking lot.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's awesome. Yes, it's a pain. Like we were talking pre-show, it is so hard because the last 30 days is when everyone wants to sign up and get their ticket. So you have so many questions and self-doubt. You're just like, are people going to show up?
Well, last year's event, I signed the contract in January and the event's in September. And I had to put out, I paid $400,000 for an event coordinator. I paid like, last year was just, fuck it. I had a great event. I had a great turnout, but I got raped over the coals by the cost that I didn't see because I wasn't smart enough to see it. And, you know, last year I had to float it for a long period of time. So like this year, like I actually changed to the model. I'm like, I'm not booking anything. I want to do 5-month period, like 5 months run, because I don't need it to be a year out. 5 months, hey, let's do it like this. So then I don't have to float the money as long, right? Then I get a lot, like allows you to actually make a better decision. But yeah, last year I was like sitting there and I'm like, I can't operate my business because all my money's tied up in this shit and I can't pull any money out to do anything. And people don't understand what it takes to do that. Because we're not large corporations. I'm not like, you know, Service Titan, they have their pantheon of that. Service Titan's a fucking billion-dollar business. They can do whatever, they have the money. They got a whole team. For the most part, us, we got our team, and what it does is actually distracts our team because our team's tied up over doing this. They can't be over here making money doing other shit. And that's one other thing that I've kind of ran into as well. But let's not talk about events. Let's talk about a little bit about business, right? So obviously you're in the roofing space. You went from being a firefighter. Now we're in the roofing space. And keep in mind, the roofing space is hot right now. Hot. Like all, so all the guys in HVAC that got their big private equity checks and they got their non-competes, now we're all going over there. We're looking over at roofing like she's a little sexy bitch. Like, hey, who's that girl over there? I want to go see what's up. And a lot of these guys are being really successful. Like I got my buddy Lance Bachman. I just talked to him. He just had a $2 million March and that business is 5 months old, right? And the principles that we apply in HVAC are super they transfer over to the retail side of roofing very well. I know the one thing that a lot of us, we don't understand is the insurance side. We're like, okay, now we're trying to know that, but we also understand retail. Like HVAC companies, we know how to take that customer and sell them on financing and sell them on buying it, sell them on quality and all that stuff rather than depending on the insurance companies. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and how it was trying to understand going from what you did at the fire department, all of a sudden you got to understand the roofing business?
Yeah, man, to be honest with you, I didn't start with roofing. I went into marketing first, and my first client ended up being a roofer. And so I saw that industry and was like, man, this is a good-looking industry. Like one roof, and they can afford to pay me my retainer versus working with a personal trainer or working with a coffee shop. I got to get them 2,000 cups of coffee to be able to pay me every month. And so it didn't take long for me to help some people grow pretty quickly in the roofing industry to say, I just need to start my own. And it really just started as a case study. And then we continued growing from there. And yeah, it's kind of always been like something that I didn't do full time because I've just enjoyed doing multiple things. I've partnered in some other companies. We've got an app. We've got the event. We've got the mastermind. But yeah, it's been a fun ride. And like for me, I just always hired the right people. I jokingly, but like seriously tell people, I still don't know that much about roofing. Like if you started talking product and all the stuff to me, I don't know that much about it. I just hire the people that do. So yeah, I just enjoy the opportunity to build up.
Wait, you're telling me you don't have to be good at roofing to run a successful roofing company? And the people that are listening to this is so hard for contractors to understand. They're like, they think that you've got to know everything about that industry inside and out before you can go start a business. And it's quite the opposite. So like, if you guys listen to what he said, right? Whatever you're not good at, find the people that are and put them in a position and empower them to actually go run that business for you. And I just talked about Lance. Lance the same way, man. Lance does not know. That guy could not put, if he took a hammer and a nail and he said, put it in the fucking wall, he would say, I don't know how. Right. But how is he exiting these businesses for $30-40 million in trades? He's never painted a house. He's never freaking put a roof on. He's never installed an air conditioning system. So as you guys are thinking about this stuff, really think about it, because a lot of you guys were like entrepreneurial seizures. You were a technician. And all of a sudden now you're a business owner where maybe you're not the person to run the business. Maybe you are that guy that you're the more the, hey, I'm going to make shit happen. You got to find the person that's the operator that can help you scale that business as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, there's no doubt you don't have to know the industry, but you got to be able to find the right people that do and build them up and develop them as a leader. We did a lot of roofing before I ever started learning anything about the roofing industry.
Yeah, and that's, like I said, the other thing, if you guys are listening to what he's saying, is he just jumped in, right? So many people have analysis paralysis, like they can't make a decision. They're too scared to go try something. And, you know, for me, I'm the same way. I just fail forward, right? I'll jump in and I like, even when I first got into HVAC, man, I got an HVAC 9 years ago now. I didn't know what the hell HVAC stood for, right? And I got my opportunity and a lot of the times you got to fake it till you make it, right? And put yourself in rooms where you don't feel comfortable, but you act like you do feel comfortable. Like I remember being around some of these owners, like, you know, I had a $5 million business, but I'm hanging out with these guys that got $100 million, $200 million businesses and I'm acting like I belong, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes you just got to fake it till you make it and get around people. Like, so obviously as you're trying to learn the trade, and one thing that I did was I would do a lot of shop tours. I'd go meet these people that have these businesses. A lot of guys are a lot more open than they used to be, you know, 10, 15 years ago. Like they're willing to show you what they're doing. They're willing to help you if you're willing to step out of your comfort zone. Did you do anything like that as you're scaling your business?
Yeah, for sure. I think community is everything. You know, that's why you have your group. I have my group. We have our own communities, whether that's free community, paid mastermind, whether we're doing events, just surrounding yourself with people that are going to level you up. You know, it's the whole goldfish thing. If a goldfish stays in a bowl this small, he's going to stay this small. If you put him in a bigger bowl, he's going to grow with it. And I think humans are the same way. I know too many guys that are the king of this small town that I'm in. Like, they're big shit here. They're the biggest roofer. They're the biggest tree guy. They're the biggest landscaper, whatever. But they don't do anything in comparison to some of the people I meet traveling around and joining masterminds and coaches and things like that. So, yeah, getting around people that are going to level you up and just continually crack away at your skull until you realize what's possible is so important.
Well, I talk about it all the time. Is like, you'll never have a $5 million business that you see a $5 million business operate, because you can't. A lot of times, as human mind, maybe we can more than other people, right? But most times, the human eye can't comprehend stuff they've never seen before, and that's why there's so many things that don't. There's not that many real new inventions, right? There's new inventions every once in a while, because if you haven't seen it, you can't make it happen for the most part. And like for me, when I got to the 5 million point, I wanted to go see a $10 million business. Then I wanted to see a 20 million. Now I go into some of these guys that are 100, 250 million, whatever it is. And you get to level up. And that's what these conferences are about, right? Like, a lot of people are like, you know, I don't want to hear that speaker. Half the time when I go to conferences, I don't really sit down. Like, I was at Door-to-Door Con. I maybe sat down for 30 minutes to listen to the people on the stage. The entire time I was at the conference, I was going around and meeting people that I've never met before and trying to figure out a way that we can make money. So I'm at the conference. I was at Door-to-Door Con. I ended up making $200,000 worth of sponsorship deals while I'm at Door-to-Door Con talking about my conference for people that have never heard about me. Because I went up there and I started talking to them, said, what do I do? And they said, oh, well, that sounds really cool. How do I get involved? And then also we make money, right? And we also made other connections for my other businesses as well. So you want to talk a little bit about that. Like, for me, conferences were always big. I always went there to try to learn something, how to get away, how to go meet the guy, shake the guy's hand that I look up to. How do I meet him? How do I become friends with them? And how do I get around them? Do you kind of do the same thing?
Yeah, I've kind of, if I'm being completely honest, have transitioned now to where I don't do masterminds and events as much as I used to. It was like every month I was going to one. Now it's more of the one-to-one coaching, like going and seeking out people that are where I want to be, the nine-figure guy, and just paying him whatever I'm going to pay him for him to coach me, whether it's $25,000 for a half-day consult or if I'm paying him $5,000 a month for one call a month. I just want to be in his pocket. I want him to be able to call me, text me back if I need him. But I think depending on where you're at, the community is where you should start with. And like, you've got your conference coming up. What are the tickets to your conference?
I mean, I make it simple for the small guy. It's $495 for general admission. But then obviously for as you guys know, these conferences are expensive. So you step up and most people are buying our social pass, which is $1,495. That gets you obviously all the food. It gets you into Rick Ross. It gets you to like all the events all the other stuff at the events, the extracurricular stuff that the general admission just gets you a seat to go watch the people on stage, right? And as you know, like these conferences, the money is made or like the knowledge is usually gained at the after parties, at the events, at the things where you actually get to mingle with those people. Because the people that are on stage, you get to go meet them, hang out with them, drink with them. Next thing you know, you're picking their brain and you're having those conversations. Because most of those guys, like they didn't just show up overnight, right? They didn't just magically get given a business. They built it and they'll tell you what they did. And you can, like, I always say, don't ever be just a fly on the wall, man. You got like the squeaky wheel gets oiled just like anything else in life. If you go up and talk to these guys, they'll spend time with you. They'll invest in you. They'll tell you what you should do, what you shouldn't do. But yeah, so we try to keep the conferences as affordable as we can. But obviously, you know, these things are expensive as shit to put on.
Yeah, I've been telling people for years, man, my first event in 2019, that seven-figure handshakes trump six-figure keynotes. The value of these events are absolutely in the networking. So at $1,495, $1,500, I don't know how you don't justify that. I mean, you're talking about one extra job that you sell. You're talking about one extra rep that you're able to hire that goes out and sells some jobs for you. In worst case, if you're brand new and you're just like, dude, I don't know how I could come up with $1,500, surely you can figure out $500. It's just, you got to decide. Like, if you really want it bad enough, you'll figure it out. I mean, it's 30 days away or whatever. Just figure it out and get around the people, level up, because you just don't know what can happen until you get there. So yeah, just being in the community, man, it's everything.
So obviously the events are great, but you know, circling back to your roofing company. So obviously you grew it, right? And then you exited and then you bought it back. You want to tell a little bit about that story? Because, yeah, you know, it's like, you know, jokingly, like I had that thought in my head, is I think at some point I'll probably buy mine back. It's just kind of inevitable with what's going on with private equity, right? You want to talk about that? That's like Barstool Sports, baby. You got to buy back for a dollar. No.
Dude, I wish it was wild, man. So, did they go through with that? Did they buy it back?
Yeah, he bought Barstool Sports back for a dollar.
Was that like in the last year?
It was a couple years ago. Yeah.
Okay. I had heard that they were talking about that. I didn't know he actually bought it back for sure.
Yeah, he bought it back for $1.
Oh, nice. That's badass. Yeah, mine is, I wish it was a super sexy story. It worked out good. But yeah, 2021, we get some calls about selling. I'm not super interested because I'm still wanting to grow it at that point. We get an offer that I feel like is worth more than the company's worth at that point, if I'm being completely honest. But it was a cash and stock deal because it was a public company. And so the stock was on the way up, and I'm like, hell yeah, I'll do it. It was a $48 million deal. And so pretty quickly, within like 3-4 months, I get offered to take over as CEO of the company. Me and the CEO end up not seeing eye to eye on some things. I decide not to do it. I didn't want all the liability of it. And the relationship just went downhill real fast after that. I had what was called a make-whole provision, and all this stuff is public. Like, you could go look it up because it was a public company. I had a make-whole provision. And so at 1 year after the acquisition, if my stock wasn't worth what I got it at, then they would have to make it up with more stock. And it ended up being like 127 million shares total in stock. So they didn't want to pay me that. We got a huge, nasty lawsuit. They said a bunch of stuff that was not true, trying to get me to bend and break. And I'm pretty damn stubborn, man. Like, we don't know each other that well, but I'm pretty stubborn. And I'm like, dude, if you smear my name and you say things about me that aren't true, when I bust my ass to give back and help people, I'll go to my grave fighting you to prove that it's not true. I don't care if I got to lose everything doing it. So we got this lawsuit. It went on for like 4 months, and they started hitting me with settlement offers that were pretty good. And I was telling my attorney, like, I'm not settling. We're going to go the distance. I want to show. I want to prove in court with a judge that I didn't do it. Because the judge at this point has already responded to some of their claims. Like, well, this obviously isn't true. And this obviously isn't true. Like, some of the stuff you could just research online. And so they came to me. They're like, hey, how about this? You get to take your company back. You keep all the cash. And you keep millions in shares. And so I did that. I took the company back. I've got another deal with them. We continue to grow it. Last year was a great year. And so it's been a wild ride, man. But in the process of that, I was still running RoofCon. I acquired roofing.com, started building that out as a partner program. And so, yeah, it was just crazy. But it created a lot of self-doubt because even though the things they were saying weren't true, it was all over the news in the roofing space. And so I had people that I thought were my friends turn their back on me and say some really shitty stuff about it. So it was tough, man. It was a really hard time of my life. For sure, the hardest season of my life. And then followed that up immediately with that loss in RoofCon in 2022. So just back to back. And it took me a minute, man, to come back. Really through the end of last year when I told you about getting malaria. Like, it took to that point to realize none of that stuff matters. I'm here. I made it through the other side. And I'm going to make it through the other side every single time. I'm going to make it through every valley back to the mountaintop. And nobody's going to slow me down. And so, yeah, I wish I could say that I didn't ever have that self-doubt, but I think it happens for most of us.
It does, man. And, you know, I went through, you know, like I said, I went through a lot of different stuff. I mean, you grow a business fast. Anytime you grow something fast, there's always going to be issues. There's always going to be obstacles. There's always going to be things in your way. I mean, you know, 2021, I almost went bankrupt. I'd grown to 120-ish employees. You know, we were in multiple markets and we were scaling like crazy, but I didn't understand the business side of it as well as I should have. So I was out kicking my coverage. I'm like, my cost to run that business had gone out of control. My overhead had and it ballooned to like had way too much for the revenue we were bringing in and our profit margins. And I didn't even notice it until I got to that. And I was like, fuck. And then I had to lay off all these people. And I go through that emotional stuff. Like that was the first like real loss. Like, you know, I got hit in the face and I had to like pick myself up. And you know, and then a lot of stuff like, you know, with you probably the same way, like I do a lot of the stuff in the public eye, right? Like I told my entire story and I'm kind of out there and I'm all this stuff and people are waiting for you to fucking fail. So when you talk about like you failed and all of a sudden those people aren't there for you, you can expect that, right? Like same thing with me, man. If something came out and I failed, I guarantee that I'd be fucking dragged across the fucking internet like crazy. People that thought they were my friends, I already know what they would do because I've already seen it, man. I've already seen them go because as soon as they don't need you anymore, you don't bring value to them or they could use you to step themselves up, they're going to stomp on you, right? Like, I'm dealing with a lot right now in my industry because people are like, they're like, oh, this guru, this and guru that. I'm like, yeah, I ain't no fucking guru, bro. Like, all I know is I went through a lot of shit. I know I've grown multiple businesses. I know I'm in fucking 7 different verticals with, you know, multi-million dollar businesses. So, like, I'm not a guru, but I know how to run business. I know how to get people attracted. I know how to do this. But like, how can you bash someone like constantly? I've always constantly given back. I've always constantly helped people. I do so much free shit. I respond to my shit all day long. I try to keep all my stuff as affordable as possible. And people still want to bash me, but these are the same people that have never done anything to give back to fucking nobody. And so that's why I take it with a grain of salt, but I also expect it. Like, I know that if I fail or something came up tomorrow, these people would drag me like crazy, right? And it's also a fear of ours, right? Like, when you do everything in the public, you have to be on your shit, right? And like, for me, I got a reality TV show coming out this year. And I'm like, I'm nervous as fuck. Cause it's like, now it's going to be a bigger scale. And it's like, fucking, I already had enough people that hate me. Like, what's going to happen when you have a reality TV show? And I don't know. So I get it, man. I get where you're coming from. And I get how people are, but that's just nature, man. The people on the top, they want to throw stones at.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, man, to relate to that, a quick story is RoofCon 2022 at the one that was rough for me. I was interviewing Tebow on stage, and we're just talking about like his career at Florida and how so many people hated him, even though he was like the hero for that team, the hero in college football, the Heisman, like a good dude, good human being. And he said he went home to his dad one time. His dad calls him Timmy, and he's this huge dude, 6'4", whatever, 250, massive guy. And he said he was crying to his dad. He's like, Dad, I just don't understand. Like, I get so much hate from so many people in person when I'm out on social media. People are always talking bad about me. I don't get it. Like, I'm a good person. I try hard. I don't treat anyone wrong. And he said his dad just looked at him and said, Timmy, listen, buddy, it doesn't matter how hard you try. People are going to choose to hate you no matter what. If they got to know you, if they take the time to get to know you, they'd probably love you. But some people just, that's just how they live. Like, they just live in a negative mindset and they want to dislike you because you are a good person. And dude, he said that on the stage and he was like talking to the crowd and he was talking directly to me. Like, I just remember it hit me right in my chest. Just be like, man, he's right. Like, no matter what I do, I can give away every ticket to RoofCon every year. Every year I make a post before RoofCon and I say, hey, if you cannot afford to come, if you truly can't afford to come, hit me up and I'll give you a ticket. Like, if you really can't afford to come, but you promise to go to every session and give it all you got and trust the process and go all in and yada, 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 and implement all the stuff, I'll give you a ticket. But this is always the condition. You get one. I'll give you 1 year. Don't come back asking for a ticket next year. You got to go implement the stuff and grow your business so you can afford to come and pay for a ticket next year so I can give back to the next people. Because like you said, man, we don't make money on these events. Like, it's a give back. Now, don't get me wrong. I want to make money. Like, I'm hoping this year we actually make money.
Every year I fucking keep hoping. Every year. I'm like, this is it, man. My friend's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Why did you do that? I'm like, dude, I'm telling you, this is the year, baby. If we're going to do it, motherfucker, never happens.
Why am I rooting for you, bro? I'll fucking sell some tickets for you.
No, I get it, man. Like I said, you are correct. I do actually do the same thing. So for the last 3 years, the last couple of weeks, if they're sub $2 million a year, they can't make it. I do the same thing. I give them a free ticket. And it's funny because I actually have, I have a guy coming on to my podcast next week that, I gave him a free ticket. I've supported this guy. He's a little one man shop. And his name's Willie. And me and him, we're always like going back and forth, like friendly, right? And so we started this like meme war, and it was like, he went real dark with it. I'm like, hey, dude, that's a little fucking bad. Like, I was funny. You're fucking trying to bash me. Don't do that. So finally he takes it down after all that shit. And then I wake up one morning and he's fucking bashing me. He's like, oh, Victor doesn't want to let me speak on his event. Like, first off, like, you're a one man band in Virginia. Like, people are paying to come here. I'm not going to put you on the stage. Like, what the fuck? And I woke up to this bashing. So I'm like, all right, fucking. So I dragged him. I made a post and it got a lot of traction. And then obviously I used that to promote the event and stuff, but I have him coming on next week. And I'm like, dude, I'm like, I gave this guy a free ticket to my event. I bought his merch. I've done all this stuff with this guy. And then the second he gets an opportunity, he's trying to stomp me out. I'm just like, come on, bro. Like, what the fuck? But I'm pretty excited. Now I'm going to use it to obviously promote the podcast and promote the event. He's going to be on next week. And I like to make I might like to make light out of it, but like, dude, people, it's just wild what goes through their process and what they think. And it's like, man, maybe I'm not your cup of tea. Like, you don't got to fucking follow me. I don't care. Like, that. I just know that what's in my heart. I know what's in a lot of these guys' hearts and what, they really want to help people. And usually you can pick that up. There are some guys that just want to make money, right? They want to rape and pillage and rob people and do whatever they can. But most of the time, if I can't, like, I always, like, that's why I don't do contracts. I don't do that weird shit. It's like, dude, if I'm not your cup of tea, fire me. I don't care. And I think that's the best way to go about business, because it's like, dude, it's like, I want to earn my keep every month. I want to earn my opportunity to be trusted. And most people won't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that, man. I can appreciate that. I'm not a big, I don't love contracts either. I've got kind of feel the same way.
I literally would love to do everything free. Like, if it didn't cost me money, if I didn't lose money, if I wasn't like losing my ass, I would do everything for free. I don't give a shit.
Yeah. Like, about anything with contracts is like, you know, I have my people on the team that are way smarter than me, that are finance gurus and legal gurus, and they're like, oh, you need to have contracts. I'm like, dude, the reality is, if they're really that pissed off and feel like I didn't deliver value, I'm not going to hold them to it anyways. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And like I said, I get it, because obviously the way you value, like, if I want to go make a valuable business, like, and private equity wants to buy it, I have to have predictability. And obviously, as you know, I know that, like, there's some business, like my training company, I'm never going to sell my training company, right? It's just going to be that's a lifestyle business, right? And then there's like someone like my software company where I'm building that is going to be, that's an enterprise, right? Like, I want to build an enterprise value so I can sell it. So it's a lot of the stuff is also knowing what you're going into in business. And I talk to contractors all the time, because some of these contractors really just want a lifestyle business for as long as they're going to be, and they want to pass it off to a kid. Or there's the contractors that I try to deal with that I talk to. It's like, hey, I want to build an enterprise that I could sell to a private equity. They'll come in and give me a big chunk of money and give me 10 years of my life, 10 years of income in 1 year. And those are there's two different types, right? And there's no problem with either one. You could be a lifestyle chugging a truck guy for the rest of your life, as long as you make a good living, take care of your family, you have good opportunities. But, you know, for the most part, people, like, you know, I'm 35, man. Most of the guys that are my age or younger, like, we don't want to do this for 20 years. We want to be in and out in 5 years and make a bunch of money, that be able to go into real estate and do whatever the other things that we want to do and enjoy our time. And it's just two different ways of thinking. And sometimes when you think one way, you forget that there is another side, right? It's like Republicans versus Democrats. Like, dude, you're not going to persuade, you're not going to change those fucking people's mindsets. Like, Democrats are not going to go Republicans. It's not going to go back and forth. It's like, those are their ways. You just got to understand there's two different types of people. There's different types of people out there, and you got to learn how to work with everybody.
Yeah. I agree, brother.
So, but man, I'm excited to finally meet you. I've been following you on social media for a while. And like I said, our stories are kind of similar. Obviously, you're in roofing, I'm in HVAC, and we kind of came up from nothing. We built our stuff. We're self-made. And I don't know how old you are. How old are you?
33.
So a little bit younger than me, man. So you've done some really big things in a short period of time. And anytime you do that, people are going to throw stones. There's always going to be that on the other side of it. So I'm glad you came on, man. And I'm excited. I definitely want to be out at RoofCon this year. That's right around my birthday, so I don't see why I can't make it out. I know that, you know, I'm working, getting into the roofing industry anyway, so it's going to be great. So I do plan on being out there. If you guys are in the roofing industry, I'd like to see you at Rocket X. Obviously, anytime you get to round any winners, and a lot of these guys there have built big businesses in the roofing space. I have roofer guys speaking. I have HVAC guys, plumbing, electrical, garage doors with Tommy Mello. All those things are going to be there. So if you guys can make it out to the event May 1st through 3rd in Dallas, we have a great lineup. Go to callprofitrocket.com. Get your tickets, secure them today. Hunter, how about your event, man? How do they get a hold of you, or what's the best way to contact you?
Yeah, I'm pretty simple, man. I'm not really on all the socials. I mainly just do Facebook, so you can look me up, Hunter Ballou. If you want to check me out, you can shoot me a DM. We've got all kind of free resources and training to automate your business, help you out. And then RoofCon is just roofcon.com, October 23rd through the 25th. Got some good speakers coming. Haven't announced many yet, but we're excited about it. We had Lance speak last year at it. I think Lance is the one that connected us, actually. We'd love to see you guys out there.
Awesome, man. Hunter, it was a pleasure. Thank you guys for tuning in to the Rocket X podcast. I hope you guys enjoy this. I don't take any sponsorships, so if you guys could like, subscribe, share to other people, spread the word. I'd like to get as many listeners on here as possible. As usual, you guys enjoy your day, and I hope you guys go out and crush it in business. Hunter, man, thanks again. We will be in touch soon.
Later.